So Bob, emails, what do you say?
Yep.
These emails have to do with borderline complex PTSD and disorganized attachment.
Okay.
There are a number of those. Patron Janice says, guess what? After all my hapless and helpless emails to you, I have a new diagnosis. In the past, I was diagnosed with major depressive disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, seasonal affective disorder, and avoidant personality disorder. My therapist pulled a trigger and diagnosed me with quiet borderline. I've looked into a DBT skills group. I'm so freaking excited and hopeful, all caps.
Great.
Number one, the borderline personality disorder label is relieving because I have felt crazy. Number two, I might have a DBT skills group to start next week.
Hey, right
number,
on.
Number three, my second appointment with a potential new therapist is Saturday.
Wow.
There's hope. I can't believe I just said that. Thanks so much for your help across the country in New Jersey. P.S. Ask Bob if he knows St. David's, Pennsylvania. It's where I went to college. Everything he reminisces about Pennsylvania, I think of my wonderful days near Radnor, Pennsylvania.
Golly, I do know that, but it's been so long since I lived there that I don't know where anything is. I think St. David's is west of Philadelphia. On
well, a lot of things. Or no. Yeah, a lot of things are west of Philadelphia.
Actually, most of the country is west of Philadelphia. but west of the city itself. I mean, not too far west. Anyways, yeah, all right. I love talking about that stuff.
Yeah.
We had cheesesteaks at the Super Bowl. It was really fun.
We did. And they were good.
Yeah.
Like, really good.
Surprisingly they were really good.
Yeah. To get a diagnosis that feels accurate.
Yeah.
For some people, they might be like, well, doesn't that suck that you have borderline?
Yeah, yeah.
But to finally have a conceptualization and a path forward can be so relieving and hope-inducing.
I've heard it many times, actually. Oh, that's what I have, and it's a relief.
Yeah.
Therapists are the ones that have trouble with that particular label.
Yeah.
People that have BPD, you know, the label is often very relieving.
Yeah. Yeah. Patron Bob, oh no, so no. This person, Patron Bob Fan Forever, this person, is Bob Fan Forever patron, she says, two questions. Number one, what kind of attachment might the child of parents with disorganized attachment have, or parents with insecure attachment generally? Bob, what do you think?
Well, let's see. They could be preoccupied. I could see that. They could be avoidant. Yeah, I could see that. They could be anything.
They could be any of the... Yeah, they could literally be secure.
They could be secure.
The disorganized parents manage it well or there's enough protective factors.
Parents, I've been so impressed with parents. Like the couples I see, many of them are parents. And I'm impressed that even though they haven't had an experience of security as young people, many of them, they're often really, really good parents. It's like they have an emotional intelligence. They know exactly what to do for their child. And that translates well because, you know, like, oh, what should we do for you? It's probably the same stuff. It's harder, but having an insecure style doesn't mean you raise insecure kids.
Yeah. Number two, is it possible to measure attachment style in the middle of an intense mood episode? I've had depression that cycles for a long time. Mm. I'm also really intolerant to medication, so it's kind of here for the long haul, sadly. And I'm never sure if it's even possible to test what my attachment style is. I can answer some attachment quizzes, questions consistently, but most of my answers vary drastically depending on my mood.
Of course.
Thank you both. Bob, what do you think?
Yeah. I bet, yeah, that makes sense to me that your experience of connection would be vastly different when you're depressed as opposed when you're getting relief from depression or when you're, you know, when your mood's better.
Yeah.
So
and people react to you differently when you're depressed as opposed to otherwise.
Right. That's really true. Right. That's such a complicated thing. There's so many interplaying factors.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Good phrase. Up at your patron, Hannah from Indiana. She says, up at your patron, Hannah from Indiana. It's like Rosanna, Rosanna, Dana.
Is it Hannah with an H at
it's
the end?
It's Hannah, Hannah, Indiana. It's with an H, yeah.
I love the H at the end.
Oh. Kirk and Bob, I was listening to your episode recently about Bob's fallback into Butler syndrome, and I found myself relating quite a bit. Mm. I began doing stand-up comedy 5 months ago.
Wow!
And have had fluctuating interest in going to open mics and writing. Chime in here. Have you ever had an impulse to do stand-up or a fantasy of doing stand-up?
No, not even once.
Me neither, but... one of the nicest, strangest compliments I ever got was I was in graduate school and a fellow student, I was talking about another stand-up or something, and the guy just randomly said, you'd be a good stand-up comic. And I was like, what? No fucking way would I be good as a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
For so many reasons. But to see me through his eyes, I just, because that's not a normal compliment you would get. That's not normally something you would
say. Guess he thought you were really funny.
Or obnoxious. I don't know.
No, funny. Well, anyways, good for Hannah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, stand-up 5 months ago. I've had fluctuating interest. I mean, I've had full, long-standing themes in therapy with clients who wanted to do this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had a client that was?
Mm-hmm, I've had two.
Yeah. There's such a barrier to entry
given
people's confidence. You know, people, I would guess that 99% of people who want to be a stand-up comic never start it because of all the embarrassment or worries or, you know, I'm a fraud, that kind of thing.
I had a client, he wanted to be a stand-up comic and he'd do the open mics. And he told me one of his jokes and I cannot repeat it because it's identifying, but it was fucking hilarious and I still laugh about it. It was really, really fun. It's a good one.
She says, when I go to open mics, I always have a great time. The other comics are so supportive and I find that I'm actually really good at stand-up.
Right on.
However, it's very easy for me to become discouraged. I will feel that intense dread about going to open mics and that fear of judgment and ridicule if I show up unprepared or if I don't do well.
Yeah.
This has led me to avoid writing and I have considered quitting altogether.
Yeah.
I have disorganized attachments and obsessive compulsive personality disorder traits that I'm sure are contributing to this. In the episode, Kirk, you suggested that Bob's interest in the writer's group was a gauge of his connection to the self. That resonated with me, and I found that might be why I have a hard time allowing myself to take up space, quote-unquote, by going to open mics. You suggested that Bob attend group therapy as a way to break this cycle.
Yeah, you and my therapist both say the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Would you be able to discuss this in more depth for those of us in similar situations? I also wanted to thank you and Bob for your openness. Your discussion helped me to gain more insight into my fallback into Butler syndrome myself and has given me a lot to talk about with my therapist. Bob, what do you think?
Well, first off, thank you. That's really gratifying to hear, and I'm glad that we're contributing in some way to your well-being and your welfare, and hang in there. I think group therapy is a really good idea because group therapy is not one-on-one with a therapist, and you're creating connection and getting feedback from many people, and of course, I'm talking about your own experience of being in the group. That's what's great about it. So my guess, I don't think it's a substitute. I don't think individual therapy is a substitute for group therapy. They each have their power. So
how would you benefit if you went?
The very same way, as it would be an experience of connection with others who would mirror back to me their experience of me and provide me probably with a corrective experience, because you go to group therapy, even if you don't like somebody or like something that they do or say, it's not a place where rejection is, where that would be dealt with straight up and resolved, at least as I understand group therapy. People aren't always going to like each other. That's just life, but they can live together, you know, and accept one another and get along.
Mm-hmm. It depends on the group. You know, there are what we commonly called process groups. Which are much more relationship oriented between the group members.
Right.
But like your DBT skills.
That's not about group. It's group cohesion as a strategy to help get skills taught.
Right.
But process group is about what it's like to be in the group.
Yeah. And you're talking about relationships and the therapist is encouraging crosstalk and cross-relational work and and spontaneous speaking up and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
and it handled well is really useful.
Yeah. Process groups are rare and few and far between. Yeah. It's hard to find one.
Yeah.
It's also hard to get one going. There's a lot of therapists who would love to have their own process group, but have a hard time getting enough clients to sustain one because, you know, if a client drops out, you have to replace them.
And commitment. And
It's unfortunate. It was a big thing in the 60s and 70s and 80s that just fell out of fashion. Yeah. And so you might be in a town where there's literally no options.
Right.
Or there is, but you don't know how to find them on Google or something.
So they're probably in Indiana, they could probably find one.
Yeah.
But you'd have to look.
Yeah. Particularly with online now. If you're doing online group therapy, I'm guessing that's easier. But because to get everyone in the same room at the same time, that can be kind of hard.
Yeah. Right?
But yeah, the key, I think, for you, Bob, and maybe for Hannah, is that unless you do something, you'll slide back into Butler syndrome and deny the self.
Yeah.
You have to do something.
Yeah.
And it has to be, and it's going to challenge you. It's going to not feel comfortable. Just like when you were in Italy with the writers group.
The writers group.
There was a moment of crisis where you were at the crossroads and you could have avoided.
Could have.
And you were heading down that road, but you took a step in the direction. You had a very good teacher who
good guy.
Could, what do they call it? Could honeymoon as a therapist? Not honeymoon.
Moonlight.
Moonlight. Thank you. You could moonlight as, he could moonlight as a therapist, maybe. I'm just, I don't know.
But, oh, he hates it when we say it, but he's a great therapist.
So you had help, but you made a choice. And you also went to the class to begin with, and you continued with it. And then you continued going that road. At any point, you could have avoided. You did it, you know, and then you leaned into it when you got back stateside. So it's a practice.
Yeah.
It's a routine. It's a effort. And every day you got to wake up and say, I'm going to commit to being in the world and taking up space and doing what it takes to push myself into that space. You can't just wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to live in myself and I'm going to have you have to say, I have to set up this whole elaborate kind of thing to make sure that it pushes me into the world, you know, which maybe it's group therapy, maybe it's the writing group, maybe it's, I don't know. Like, what else could you do?
I don't know. Hannah, ain't nobody going to hand it to us.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to give it to us. If we want it, we have to take it. And when we take it, we have to accept that what comes with it is the crap. So fear, shame, probably discomfort without a doubt. And that has to be part of it because let's face it, it's not going to feel good, at least some of the time. And probably more of the time than anything, it'll feel okay and you'll be glad you did it. You probably won't come to the end of your days thinking, I wish I hadn't done that. You'll probably come to the end of your days, if you don't do it, thinking, I wish I had. But nobody's going to give it to us and someday we will be gone. And then it'll be too late.
What would motivate you to
that? That's a good speech.
That would motivate you?
Yeah.
To focus on that?
Yeah.
That you have one life to live.
That's it.
And you could live it in avoidance. And in the back seat of the car.
Ain't nobody gonna give us what we want. We have to reach for it. Mm-hmm. We don't have to be assholes about it, but we do have to reach for it. Because it isn't coming.
Is that the delusion that if I just wait, eventually someone will pull me out of this?
Somehow some magical thing will happen and then I won't be in this anymore.
Which is totally not even possible. There's nothing anyone could do to pull you out without you making a choice.
You know, Hannah, I really want to thank you for writing in because you're reminding me and it is very easy to fall back and forget.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. What are you going through right now?
I feel really sad.
About?
Falling asleep.
Yeah. Sad for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other people are sad. I'm sad for you.
Thank you.
And
you're still not going to do it for me, though, are you? I guess you'll officiate my wedding, but
I'll be here with you.
But you won't.
I'll be here with you.
Yeah. No, I'm fine with you, of course.
I know.
It's a good thing, Hannah. Right on.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see you on, Jimmy Fallon, I guess, huh?
Do you feel more in your body right now than you were before?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you have to make a choice to go with it?
Yes.
Like you could have avoided.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's easy.
It is easy. I'd say that the avoidance, though, isn't a conscious thing or a choice. It's just an automatic fallback.
Right.
Falling asleep. And this is it, man. I'm 50. I'll be 56 when you marry me.
So Bob's referring to something that will play actually later. We recorded a bunch of stuff earlier that got into some personal stuff, so we're going to make it a patron only. And, and so if you want an explanation as to what Bob's referring to, you become a patron and the rest of the episode will be heard there.
Right.
And you'll know why I'm marrying Bob. which is true. So what would it be, you know, for you and Hannah to be in that space more often? How do you do that?
I don't know because I keep falling asleep.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
except maybe this is part of the answer.
Yeah.
Is this kind of wake up?
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe Hannah's going to fall asleep again too.
Yeah.
I don't really know. Do you?
I have my ideas, but
that's interesting. Well, actually, you already said it. You said it's going to take effort.
Yeah.
You're going to have to
practice. It's a practice.
A practice. Commit yourself to it. And group therapy being a really powerful key way. It's not, is it going to solve it? No. Is it going to help? Yeah. Is it essential? Probably.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds great on paper, but then I think in reality, because you're in individual therapy that involves this very pointedly every single session. So if you, for example, Bob, were to go to group therapy, it would just be another opportunity for that. But even though you're in therapy with a therapist that is perfectly situated regarding this issue, and I guess for a period of time, maybe 25 minutes, you're in yourself and taking up space, it doesn't get retained. So
yeah, that's right.
The thing that pops into my mind is a daily, maybe hourly practice or something.
Practice.
Like where you have to have a almost like the way an actor will go method or something.
Oh,
you know
that's
what I mean?
Yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis, staying in character.
Yeah, you have to stay in character. You got to push through it. And you've got to, so you wake up in the morning and you want to fall back into this thing, but you have to you have to push it, you know? And then the other 50% is you have to involve others in your practice. You have to ask people like me or Colleen or others to push you or to ask questions or to support or whatever, you know, the response or the encouragement or the questions, the attention.
Yeah.
Right. Cause I know when I ask you certain questions, there are through experience, I know that it'll seemingly push you into yourself. If I ask you a certain question or in a certain way or I don't know, do something along those lines.
Yeah. Yep. Yes.
And so that's important as well. But it has to be routine instead of the exception. I think that's the delusion that somehow it's like, well, I'm in therapy and I'm doing the work and that's what you're supposed to do. And certainly that's important. But it's a daily hour by hour practice.
That is true.
I don't think I've ever thought of it that way until
that's
now.
That's good. Yeah. I had this clock on my wall. Clock. And instead of having numbers, it has the word now for wherever each number goes. And the thing isn't, am I going to be a stand-up comic someday? Am I going to be a writer? It's, am I a writer right now? Am I a stand-up comic right now? And if the answer is no, then change. Then I'm asleep. Hmm. Probably asleep.
Definitely asleep. I mean, if you ask yourself, am I a writer right now? And the answer is no, then yeah, you're asleep because you're a writer.
That's correct. Yes, that's right.
And being a writer is being yourself, not only because you like to write, but also it's expressive. It only generates from you.
That is fact.
There's no pleasing of other people. There's no influence of what other people want or the ideas of other people. It's completely generated from your soul.
Yeah.
And the material in the book is very personal and
semi-autobiographical. Oh yeah, all writers.
But particularly this topic. You're writing about therapists.
Literally.
And
yeah.
People who might put themselves in the back burner because of this technology that sort of overwhelms them with empathy, right?
What's technology? What do you mean?
Well, the skill that they have. Isn't there some kind of helmet that they wear or is it a gene?
Oh, you're talking about my book.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm like, who's technology? What was the question?
Never mind. Okay. Point is that the storyline is very personal and resonates and it's very you.
Yeah.
And just the act of writing is also an expression
deeply
of you.
Personal, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's, I would think of it as a beachhead, really, in terms of living in the world. Like Omaha Beach in World War II, D-Day.
D-Day.
You have to establish a beachhead on the coast of France before you can invade. And the book is a beachhead. It's just a book.
It's just a fucking book. It's just a book.
But it's the beachhead into I am going to live in the world and I matter.
Right.
And I'm going to take up space. And the book is this very poignant example of that. if you ended with the book, that's not the hope. That's great. But the hope is that, you know, like what you did with Italy, you went to this class, you took up, you were pushed and pushed yourself into taking space. You're writing the book, you come home and we're having a party at your house and you shut the whole party down and you read excerpts from your book for an hour and a half. And that was taking up space. Wow. It had to do with the book, but it could have been anything.
Yeah.
It was just, I want everyone to focus on me and pay attention to me, and I'm going to show off a bit, and I'm going to share, and I'm going to move you. You know, you moved all of us. Mm. And because that's just what's going to fucking happen.
Yeah.
And everyone enjoyed it, and it was delightful and meaningful, thanks. Important. Yeah. I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by the beachhead. And then, of course, you know, taking up space with your wife and others and da-da-da.
Maybe it's all just beachheads.
That's one way of looking at it, I guess.
Yeah.
Before long, though, you got a giant island of taking up space.
Right.
A ring of beachheads. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I get it. I mean, the sleep is so tempting, and all the voices of you don't deserve to take up space. Who are you?
It's automatic.
What if I screw things up if I take up space?
Oh, yeah.
What's that about?
Oh, conspicuous consumption? Oh, yeah. No, I hate it. Yeah. No.
What's the consequence that you feel? Potential consequence? Taking up space?
I think it's the potential to draw criticism or attack.
Mm.
Yeah. So I drive a very non-pretentious car. I dress in a very non-pretentious way. I do not wear color. Well, actually, everything I wear, Colleen picked. But she tends to pick gray. Except for my t-shirt today, which you gave me. but I don't style my hair. I don't try to look like anything. And I try to appear...
invisible.
I try to appear invisible. That's a funny sentence. Yeah. So. Yeah.
It's a outward manifestation of your emotional protection method to avoid your dad beating you and criticizing you.
Yeah.
Because if you were invisible, he would notice to hit you.
Did I ever tell you that story when I was looking after Hunter when he was in high school? His parents went down to Florida for a wedding. And
so it was a kid of our friends, but he's now 35 or something.
Yeah, with two kids of his own. Jeez. He just had a baby. But he was 15. He was a sophomore in high school. And I'm, hanging out with him for a week while his folks are out of town and living at his house, et cetera. And he hasn't done his homework. It's 9:30 on a Wednesday. I'll never forget it. He's watching The O.C. I've never watched The O.C. I don't even know what The O.C. is. But it doesn't matter. So he's watching it. It's 9:30. And I just casually say, hey, Hunt, you got any homework? And he goes, yeah. Did I tell you the story? I probably did. Oh. Well, it was fascinating because I got angry. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? You got homework and you're sitting here watching TV. And this kid, amazing, he says to me, and I'll never forget it, quote, Bob, you're not used to being around teenagers. And it made me laugh. And then I stopped and I started thinking, I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't care if he does his homework. It's not my table. I'm not responsible for that. So why am I making a stink? And I realized I was afraid my dad was going to hit him. And my dad lived in Philadelphia, and we were here in Seattle, and they've met once, right? But I realized that if that were me, that's what would have come down. And so I was trying to protect him from that coming down, which I know is sort of delusional, but is also logically consistent.
Yeah.
But I ended up becoming my dad to not have him get hit by my dad.
Maybe that's why your dad hit you.
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly.
He was ironically trying to protect you from his dad or something.
Probably. Yeah. Oh, let's see. Why did that come up? Take up space. No. Visible.
You're invisible to avoid getting hit by your dad.
Oh, yeah.
That was the strategy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Emotionally invisible and physically invisible.
The reason it came up is because I probably don't even know all the ways in which I am prone to hide. That was one of them. Like, I end up caring about stuff I don't care about. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy. That's glib. It is delusional. It's seductive. That's not even really true. It's just like you ask a fish, what does water feel like? And they say, it's Tuesday.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Only when you pull a fish out of water do they understand what it is to be wet. So Hannah pulled me out.
When you're out, how's it feel?
Sad, scary, a bit hopeless, also exciting, full of possibility.
Like what?
Finish the fucking book, in this case. Mm-hmm. See Hannah on Jimmy Fallon. Mm. Who knows? Change my hair? Probably not.
You never know. Probably not.
Yeah. Colleen's like, what do you think about product, Bob? I'm like, I don't like product.
You don't need product. Your hair looks great.
Thank you. So I don't know what it'd be because I'm never out.
You've been out.
I'm often not out.
Yeah.
I think sex would be a lot more interesting.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Butler sex is much worse than, what do we want to call it? Living in the world sex?
Yeah. I think that's what we want to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm guessing a lot of people can relate to that one too.
Mm.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's quite a litmus test or quite a stage for whether one is in a stage of display, a place to figure. Am I asleep or am I awake?
Yep.
Because if I'm asleep, sex is very particular in terms of I'm on the back burner. Yep. I'm just here to please. I'm not really enjoying myself. I might even be not a great partner in this situation because the other person kind of knows that I'm not really in it.
You want to make a fire, you got to rub two sticks together.
Yeah. Unless one stick wants the other stick to lay still and both people are having excitement from... I was just
that is one hell of a stick rubbing.
And yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've had that conversation with clients where that is part of the concern. Yeah. Or part of the noticing of, and part of the emerging of the self of, I'm starting to actually enjoy sex. I'm yeah. starting to actually talk about it or assert myself or want things. And my partner actually enjoys that, which is bizarre to me, mm-hmm. that they want me to take up space. That doesn't make any sense. It's scary to take up place.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I imagine sex would be a billion times better when you're awake yeah. and in the world and mm-hmm. not invisible. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's take a break. The rest of the episode will just be for patrons of the podcast.
Oh.
We're going to talk about a lot of things that are not super personal, but, you know, kind of personal.
Kind of personal.
Yeah. yeah. So if you want to hear the rest of this episode, become, because we already recorded it is the yeah. issue at the very beginning. And so right. we're going to put it at the end. And everyone out there, please take care of yourself because
you deserve it.
If you're not a patron, if you're a patron, you still deserve to take care of yourself, but stick around.
You have
around.
To do it later.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.